Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves and this is part two of my talk with 83-year-old Fred Woods. In part one, Fred talked about his life as a child in the timber community and how, at the age of 14, he commenced work as a timber feller. This week we also hear from his wife Marge, who has some very interesting stories. But first, we commence with Fred telling a story about one of the many accidents that befell timber workers.
The Forest Commission wanted the millers to not just the logs they were using through the mill, but to fall a lot more timber, get it on the ground where it would be preserved.
Oh, okay.
Know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not up in the air with the wind and sun on it. And to do salvage work, and then Ted wanted to do it. He's a married man, naturally. He wanted to, you know, do this. And he asked me would I do it with him, but at that stage, I discovered dancing and things.
Of course. You're a young man now.
I said, no, I wouldn't. And he got a chap from the mill to go with him on the weekend, on the Saturday, and the accident happened. He was on pegs on the bottom side, Ted, and this chap was on the other side, and he'd never done that sort of work before. And if the man on the pegs, the other fella took the crosscut because you got the crosscut across the front of you, and you have to throw it out clear so your man can get off the board.
Okay.
And this chap froze and hung onto the saw long enough for a limb to come down and hit Ted. He died shortly after. 5 weeks later, we lost a ropeman crushed with a log. Out of a crew of five, we lost two in 5 weeks.
I mean, that's
it's pretty tragic, upsetting.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Pretty upsetting.
Of course it would be. I mean, you really, in one way, you just can't pay people enough for those sorts of dangers, and yet the work has to be done.
Yeah, it had to be done. There were quite a few deaths at Tangier with that salvage team.
Yes, yes. Mm. So you were about 18, 19 now?
Yes, I was, let's see, 39, early 40. Yeah, I was 19.
So this was also the early years of the war. Were you called as conscription?
No. There was a thing about protected industries, and timber industry was one of them.
Right.
I did, just by the by anyway, I tried to enlist at the Melbourne Town Hall, but I suffered with asthma.
Okay.
And I was rejected. But a lot of the boys did go from there.
So you continued to work in the timber industry right through those years?
Yeah, right through the war years.
When did you meet your wife?
In 1942, early in 42.
If I might ask you, how did you meet?
We met, believe it or not, and we neither of us visited there, but outside Young and Jackson.
What a memorable place.
Actually, I'd gone to Melbourne with Marge's brother-in-law and his wife, and Marge was working out at Bentley, and they went out there and then came into town and met us there on the corner.
Right.
And then we were married in December of 42.
So you've been married for over 60 years.
Yeah, 61 years.
Yeah. Amazing. That is absolutely fabulous.
Yeah.
When did you start a family?
1943.
Yep.
Yeah.
And how many children did you eventually have?
Three. With two daughters and a son.
That must have been a wonderful period for you.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, too right.
And they were brought up in the bush as well then?
Yeah, at Hill End. We shifted from Tangier to Hill End, didn't we?
Yeah.
And I worked there for quite a few different contractors. Then the old boss came back and I was in the middle of building a house at Hill End, and I couldn't get materials like weatherboards and flooring and that sort of thing was very scarce just after the war. Mm. He promised me that through his connection with Melbourne, Strawn and Davies, that he'd get me those things, which he did. He got for me. So I went back there for 9 months and left Marge, just came home weekends.
Did you have the young family at that stage?
Yes, yeah.
So Marge had to look after the family on her own.
That's right, yeah.
Was that difficult, Marge?
It's hard.
Yeah, I bet it was.
Didn't like it, but we survived, didn't we?
Yeah, it was a means to an end, wasn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I guess you didn't have most of the modern conveniences we have these days either.
No, we had no water, no power there at Hill End.
No power, I can understand, but no water as well.
No water. We had
tank water.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you're at the mercy of the rain.
That's right. Yeah.
And as we know, particularly in Australia, that doesn't fall all that regularly sometimes.
No.
Except when you don't want it.
That's right.
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling, I'm happy again. Laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face. I walk down the lane with a happy refrain, and I'm singing, just singing in the rain. I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling, I'm so happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face. I walk down the lane with a happy refrain, and I'm singing, just singing in the rain.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Radio.
I had a stint before we were married over in South Gippsland on SEC poles, you know, contract.
What, putting them up or cutting them?
No, cutting them.
Cutting them.
Cutting them,
right.
Yeah.
Was that an easier form of work or was that just as hard?
Just much the same, Rob. Yeah, right. Much the same.
I know you've had a lot of experiences with bushfires.
Mm-hmm.
Were you a member of the Bushfire Brigade?
Never.
So no. It's just because you're in the... Not just because you were. You were a timber worker and therefore you had that experience in the bush.
That's right, yeah. I had a run from the 39 fire while we were at Timbrook. It hit us one day in the bush, just before the 12th, I think it was, 12th of January. Came over and it was an absolute gale. I've never seen anything like it before or since. We're working in a patch of messmate bush, which is pretty sturdy stuff.
Mm.
And the chap I was working with said to me, get behind this tree, and we got behind a big solid messmate, big 3 foot six to 4 foot in diameter.
Mm, that is big.
And it ripped the head off it. It twisted the head off and it carried it a good 50 feet away from the trunk.
But how lucky you were to have a tree that sturdy to protect you.
Yeah, yeah. And we had an old rope horse. It was my job to bring this horse up from the mill to the winch where the huts were for the other boys, and to bring his food, you know, and to take him home to the stables, look after him at night. And Tom said to me, "Get the horse and go before the fire gets here." He said, "It's on its well on its way."
Could you see it or smell it at that
stage? Oh, yes, yeah, smell it, yeah. Mm. It was shocking. I got this horse, and I'll admit I panicked. There was stuff coming down everywhere.
Oh, gee, I think that's...
And I had a stick, and I'm unashamed about this, but I flogged him. I was, you know...
You were scared.
I was scared.
Anybody
he just
would.
Laid his ears back and kept walking, and I think that horse might have saved me.
Saved your life, yes, because he took control of the situation.
Just took control, and we got to the creek at the bottom, and it wasn't a bad little stream. And the water was just the same temperature as the air.
Good Lord.
Yeah, you just couldn't feel it.
And what sort of devastation did that do to the community you were in?
It took the winch where we worked, wiped out all the huts and everything there, but it missed the mill by about 300 or 400 yards, I suppose. It was so much further down,
right,
nearly 3 miles there. It missed that and went on through to Noogee and further.
Being so involved in the timber industry, maybe you could enlighten me and people listening as to what sort of activities did you undertake to either prevent bushfires or to help curtail them?
Very little. Very little.
Is that because there wasn't the knowledge of it or because there wasn't the desire by the mill owners?
It was very hard, Rob, because you never had access places to get to the start of a fire. It could start with lightning, it could start in the middle of nowhere. And it didn't take long to get a go on.
Yeah.
That was most of the cause of it. And we had one single road from where we were at... Well, we had no roads at Jimbrook, only a tram line to the town.
Yes.
And a track, a horse track.
Yes.
And to get any vehicle in there, like, you just couldn't. It'd have to be put on the rail and brought in, which restricts you a lot as far as firefighting is concerned. When I started work, as in the bush, I got 30 shillings a week as a kid. You know?
Yep.
Quid went to mum for board.
Helping her out, yes.
And 10 bob a week was mine, and I saved up and bought a push bike, and that was a big deal.
I bet it was.
It was a big deal.
I guess you were the envy of a few people.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
When did you finish working in the timber industry?
I finished in 1962, and we had moved by then to Mansfield.
Right.
And... I worked there in the bush. 62 I left there, got a job with the SEC.
In what field?
In the tree clearing.
In tree clearing.
So
this was after you'd left the industry, or did you consider that still as part of being working in the timber industry?
I consider it was similar work.
Right.
Similar work.
Because I was going to say, if you finished in 62, you were still a fairly young man then, 40 years of age.
I worked till 85.
You worked till 85?
Not my age.
No, 1985. Yeah, that was still a good stint, 60 years of age or so.
Yeah.
Still in that...
64.
Still working with timber?
Yeah.
Goodness me.
I also got into chainsaws, and I used to do chainsaw schools for them and that sort of thing.
So what's life been like since then?
Pretty quiet. Yes, pretty quiet. We bought this block and built this house. I built the house. I've built two houses. That's two of the most useful things I've done.
Well, I can only sit here in full admiration of you, Fred, because I think myself and many people from my generation wouldn't be able to do that.
Mm.
And, you know, they say that radio is the... theatre of the imagination, and I can only ask people to use their imagination, because Fred lives in the most beautiful area. It is so green and treed and pretty.
It is. It is a lovely place.
Yeah. So you picked very well.
Mm. My dad worked here as a boy too.
In this area?
Yeah, he came from Nearham district, and he and his brother, their elder sister, kept a boarding house out here at the Mississippi Mills, and they came over here looking for work when he was 14. They walked from Nearham south through the bush, out to here. He got a job, and where he really started off, in the timber game. He went to the war from here.
What, the First World War?
The First World War, yeah.
Did he talk much about that?
Yeah, a little bit. But like most of the boys, they don't, you know, tell you too much.
No. Where did he
serve? Must have been in France.
Oh. Mm. That would have been horrific for him then.
I got some photos here.
Oh, I'd love to see them.
Would you?
Yes, I sure would.
Some of the things I've done. That's...
Good Lord.
Mm.
And you climbed up there?
Yeah, cut the top off.
Did you do one of those when he was 70? What?
Yeah, I was 73 and I did one here in the backyard.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
You must have nerves of steel. Incredibly physical work.
Yeah, it was. But it was healthy, Rob.
Bet it was.
And this was when I worked for the SEC, when the fires in 62.
Mm-hmm.
That's a possum. I went up there to rescue him because the thing was on fire. And he showed me the best set of green teeth you've ever seen.
Oh, yes. all of us that live in the hills are very aware of possums and their teeth and claws.
So I went down to get a bag and went back to put the bag over him. And he jumped. But he survived, he hit the ground and kept going. That's, I was doing a wattle tree here in the backyard early on.
And how high would that have been?
Oh, this was only about 40 feet, I think.
Only 40 feet.
Mm.
You loved your work, didn't you?
I liked it, yeah.
Yes, I can tell that. You really enjoyed working with the timber.
Yes. There it is.
Oh, with the pegs.
Yeah, I was 13 pegs up there.
Wow, and how, again, I know this is very hard given the number of years, but roughly how far off the ground would that have been?
51 feet about.
Gee, and there's how many pegs to get there? 13 to get there.
Mm.
That must have taken a fair while to get up that high.
Yeah, I used to put a couple in every night after work. It was just for a wireless aerial.
Mm.
Wireless was pretty poor those days.
Mm. Yeah. It's still not that crash off today up in the hills. Who is this gentleman?
That's my grandfather.
Oh, amazing.
He was a Welshman. And he's the man who first discovered brown coal in Gippsland.
Is that right?
He and a partner. But apparently I never met him, never knew him. But apparently, the stories I get about him, he was a fairly fiery character, and he had a falling out with his mate. And he's featured in a book written by a professor, somebody at Warrigal, on their local history. And what he was doing at the time was getting clay. He was a brickmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they found the brown coal.
Wow.
And he missed out on any of the goodies on it.
I was going to say, isn't it strange that the people that usually make these discoveries don't get to the rewards from it.
Well, hello there. It's been a long, long time. How am I doing? Oh, I guess I'm doing fine. It's been so long now, and it seems that it was only yesterday. Ain't it funny how time slips away? How's your new love?
he's doing fine. Heard you told him that you'd love him till the end of time. Now that's the same thing that you told me. Seems like just the other day. Ain't it funny how time slips away? Gotta go now. Guess I'll see you around. Don't know when though. Never know when I'll be back in town. But I remember what I told you. That in time you're gonna pay. And it's surprising how time slips away.
Listen to Older Voices, Living History on Ageless Radio.
Marge, you've been sitting in the background making some very useful contributions. A little bit from you. Were you born in Australia?
Yes, I was born in New South Wales, in Canterbury. My dad was in the army.
Right.
And, what do you call him? Free riding master at Duntroon Military College.
Right. And of course, that's all they would have been using them was horses, wouldn't they? They weren't mechanised.
Yes.
So he must have been a really good horseman to get that job.
He was. And I can always remember him when I was a child going to school. Whenever there was any big occasion, my dad used to lead the parade on his horse.
Oh, he must look very grand. You must be very proud.
Very proud, yeah.
Where did he get those skills of horse riding from?
It must have been when he was in, because he joined the army when he was 15, wasn't he, Fred?
Yeah.
So he learnt it in the army.
He served in the, what was it, the Queen's Own Hussars.
Yeah.
Sounds terribly grand.
And, you know, with the big plume hat.
Did he ever say what made him come to Australia then?
I think the army.
Oh, he came out with the army and stayed.
He came out with the army, yeah. He came out as an aide to the Governor General.
Oh, is that right?
Mm. And he was with the 13th Light Horse at Sale. And he was there as I was growing up and going to school in Sale. Dad was stationed there. He came out here to South Australia and then went to Duntroon.
Any idea just even roughly what year that was, Marge? You know, within, you know, we talk about the turn early 1900s or earlier?
1910 or 11.
Gosh. Fred, there is a time, and it's an inevitable time when we all pass on.
Mm-hmm.
When that day eventually comes for you, what would you like to be remembered for? How would you like to be seen by your grandchildren or your great-grandchildren, the people around you?
I don't know, just as a reasonably amiable character to get along with.
Is that right, Marge?
That's right.
Yes, I can see that, actually.
They all love him.
They get on very lucky with the kids. They're great.
Yeah.
We've got 8 grandchildren.
Yeah.
And they're all terrific. Yeah. Terrific kids.
Yeah.
Well, that all goes back to breeding, and that comes back to you, folk. So you've got to have good stock to get the kids.
Yeah.
Fred, I think it's probably a good place for us to finish. Thank you very much for sharing some of your life with me.
It's a pleasure, Rob.
Thank you both.
It's a pleasure.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Turak Times.